The following Dharma talk was given at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay, everybody, thank you. It's really nice to sit in here. It's so quiet. Our center is like, rah, rah, people walking by. You can hear everything, you know. It's like, it's so quiet. At least it was quiet on the outside. You guys look great. It might have been crazy town on the inside, but that's all right. We're practicing, you know. So however it is, that's why we always bow at the end. It's like, oh God, bow to that crazy mind, or bow to happiness, bow to, you know, it's a sense of just keeping to surrendering to what is, you know. However your practice is, we just work with it. So welcome to the few people who just came in. Welcome. Sneaking in. Thank you. Good to see you all. So we'll take a little bit of break here. Let's take about a 10-minute break, stretch. Oh, yeah, there's no tea because they're using that room, but yeah. We'll just get some water or walk around a little bit. But we will, we'll ring the bell in about 10 minutes, and then I want to offer a little bit of a talk and then some reflections together. But really happy to see you all. So, yeah, beautiful. Yeah. Okay, I'll take a little. Okay. So I thought I would just share for a little bit. I'm going to share some from a chapter in my book, and a little bit of one of my favorite chapters, and a topic that I just decided when I usually don't plan talks or anything until I meditate with a group, and then it all appears. So I try not to bring, some teachers bring a laptop and all these notes, and they just kind of hide behind it a little bit, I think. At the end of the day, I think it's just nice to just talk. I'm a very informal person, so I like to just like, let's all sit together and just kind of hang out and share some Dharma. And, you know, there's this chapter that I want to talk about, and I think it will weave nicely into sort of what was feeling important to share with you. And it's called Answering the Call. And Answering the Call, and it's funny because in it I had another friend who is an artist. I wanted, and it's like, the telephone. it's a brown looking Buddha, ethnic looking Buddha I wanted with a phone, right? So answering the call, you know. And then there's a bag, a suitcase. Even in the distance, that's for, you know. So these are kind of modern Zen, like, you know, koans. You could look into that and go, like, what is that? So answering the call, in some ways, you know, the call to change, and the call to leading a more spiritual life. And I'll share a little bit about my own call, because I was reflecting, wow, it's been 20 years I've been practicing. And I was like counting the years, like, oh my God, yeah, 23 now, I'm 43. God, where is this years going? You know, I was like, God, it's going so fast, you know. It's like the hourglass, really, like sands of time clicking away. And we don't really know. The great mystery is, who knows how much time you really have, right? And so we appear, we disappear. It's all very mysterious in some way. And so when I was, you know, I grew up in a really like traumatic household. It's all the same stories. My dad had drugs, and my mom is alone, and drama, and then the growing up, and, you know, apartment buildings where everyone's screaming outside. You know, it's like, it's a story that we're very familiar with, right? And you have to grow up very fast, and you have to be independent because the adults around you need help. I remember thinking that my mother is so funny, she's very childlike. So she was no way prepared for anything, right? It was like, oh no, what am I supposed to do right now, you know? And so, So therefore, all these dramas happen and trauma and all this stuff happens. So when I was a teenager, it all hit me at some point. I was really, really depressed. And for 1 4-month period, I couldn't get out of my bed. And I was luckily living with my mother's ex-boyfriend, who I was close to, one of this boyfriend she had that I had a connection to, and he had a strong connection to me. They didn't work out, but him and I stayed in touch. And he just basically let me just stay in this room and go through this process. And I started studying psychology and reading books because I was thinking something is wrong with my mind. I was really clear about that. And so then I started studying meditation and reading books about meditation. And I would try to do it, but I couldn't do it. As you know, you sit down and you're like, what am I doing? This is, you know. All these thoughts come one after another, and I was like, I'm not even doing this right. I don't even, what am I getting out of this, you know? So I would give up. And then it all clicked for me. I started to really change, and then I moved back. I was living in LA, I moved back to Oakland. And when I was moving into this new house, somebody left this Hindu book by Paramahansa Yogananda. He wrote this, he started this, he was a Hindu teacher. He wrote Autobiography of a Yogi, kind of a classic book. You should read it for fun. It's like very magical, and you know, and what's that? They made it into a movie? I've never seen that movie. Really? I'm gonna have to go look that up now. I don't know if it was as good as the book. The book was pretty. The book is hard to. It was like, is this stuff really true? I mean, it was all the magic and of Himalayan yogis and flying and disappearing, and you know, it was all the stuff that you're like, yeah, this is so good, you know. So I read that, and I read other books, but mostly I read this one book by him about the path of meditation, and I felt like that was the beginning of what was the period what I call the Great Calling. Like there's something trying to always wake us up and get our attention, right? Especially if you have these deep seeds in you. But it's so hard to listen to them and nurture them because everything is going so fast and sometimes it's so crazy. You can't hear that voice. But usually there's a time where I write in the book that this is the call that you have to answer because it just keeps ringing. It's like, hello, something's trying to get our attention. It's like, what, you know, okay, you know, and usually what can happen is there's a breakdown of some kind. Most people enter into a spiritual path, and we were talking about this yesterday on this radio show. That was funny. Most people come on the heels of a huge breakdown. Right, they show up at retreats often sobbing. That was how I was on my first meditation retreat. So after I studied for a while with this Hindu teacher, but he had died. So I would go to these meditations in the Bay Area where I lived. It had this little temple up in this hill. And I would go up there, but nobody would say anything. You would walk in and they would just bow in silence. And then we would sit for 3 hours. And they would mark the hour by this chant every hour. And I would sit there and be like, looking around for the first hour, like, what am I doing? And then after another hour of just going crazy, and then finally I would be so tired, I think I would fall into some kind of stillness. And that would last me a long time. I'd be like, I think I was doing it. I was feeling, you know. I would call my sister after, I think it was something happened, something. It took 3 hours, but something was clicking, you know. And then after a while, when I started going there, I was like, they're not teaching me anything. I go, you know, it's like, they would just look at me and say, love God, love God, love God. And I'd be like, okay, I'm going to do that. Love God, love God. And then, you know, how the mind is, right? It wasn't that loving. And I was tortured. And so just think about all my issues and problems. And anyway, so I realized I needed to find a teacher. And so I was in this relationship that was really terrible, and I was actually selling timeshare, believe it or not. I was really good at it. That was what's sad. I don't know. I just had a knack. I think people used to look at me and go, okay, we'll buy a Palm Springs timeshare. And I had this, you know, I was living in East Oakland at the time, and everybody was in a bad mood. And I would fight with my boyfriend at the time. We'd fight and fight and fight. And even our dog was so mean and mad. He would attack people, and I'd be like, God, you're mad. Everyone's mad. And I started to have this really big meltdown and had all these financial problems, and my car was about to get repossessed, and then I got fired, and it all started unraveling, basically. And all I had was that book, right, of self-realization book, and I would just be sitting on the couch crying, like, what is going on? I need an answer. And so, sure enough, someone let me know. They said, hey, there's this retreat that they teach you how to meditate. And I was like, wow, they teach you. And then they were like, it's vegetarian food. They teach you how to meditate. It's in the desert. You can get a scholarship. That was a big thing. Had no money at the time. And so I was like, I'm there. And so I drove to this retreat. It was a 10-hour drive. And of course, there's always so much drama. Me and my partner, we had a screaming breakup fight for hours the night before. I didn't even sleep. I was sobbing. I talk about this in a couple of Dharma talks. I was crying, smoking. I used to chain smoke because I couldn't deal with myself. And I was drinking Mountain Dew, like, by the gallon. While I drove to this meditation retreat, I was like, ah! I don't even know how I didn't. That was a miracle that I didn't crash the car. I don't know. It was in the desert. I was alone. It was way out on these empty roads, but thank goodness. So I arrive at the retreat. It was a huge Vipassana retreat, 150 people. It was for 10 days for beginners. And I didn't know it, but Jack Kornfield was leading the retreat. I had no idea who was there. I didn't care. I didn't know these people. I was like, and I get to the registration table, and I kid you not, I almost fainted. I was like, I need help. And they were like, oh, beginner's mind, right? They were like, it's your first retreat. I was like, I was just so exhausted. You know how that feeling is. You just like, I felt like I already had lived an entire lifetime. I honestly felt like what I was feeling was just years of chaos, years of not knowing what to do with the path, where to go, how to deal, right, checking out. And before then, I used to also smoke a lot of marijuana, too. So I was like, this isn't, you know, so it was even taking me farther from myself. So on that 10-day retreat, something very profound happened. It was like my screaming, tormented mind got quiet. And it got quieter and quieter. And I would sit, and then I would walk in the desert. And with each step, I would just, like, oceans of tears would fall. And then I would go sit, and my mind would be quiet. And then I would walk. And at the end of the retreat, I went up to this little hill. And it was the first time I heard the teachings, that there was a way, a path to work with my mind. I'd always been looking for something like that, how to calm my mind, how to work with my mind. And so I fell in love with it. And I was the only brown person there, and everyone there was like 70 at that time, right? It was all white. And I was like, oh my God, how am I going to do this path? Right? There's no one to hang out with, you know? There was like, you know, of course, I was judging the whole, like, oh my God, what am I going to, you know, my colorful community. But it didn't matter at that time because I felt like what I heard was so important at that moment that I knew it was deeper than anything else. It was just like, yes, there was something about the teaching. And I remember that first night I was in the hall, the first Dharma talk after registration, eating the, you know, manager, and they give this talk. And Jack Kornfield, he came out and he looked at everybody and he said, oh, nobly born, you who are the sons and daughters of the awakened one, remember who you are. And it hit me like a weight, and just tears started falling. I was like, I'm remembering something. I didn't know what, but it was like some kind of call to myself. It was like I answered my own call by arriving there. Like, I needed to sit. I needed to listen to myself. All the voices, all the influence, all the family. Like, it was like, I just need to hear this. Hear me. And so that became a really important moment. And I, at the end of the retreat, as I was saying, I went up on this little hill there in the way out in the desert, and I ordained myself. And I remember I was very dramatic in that moment. I was like, I will follow these teachings till the end of time, you know. You know, you have to do it really big like that, you know. At the end, you're like, you know, and I was completely altered. It took months for me. I went so deep on that retreat, and I didn't know later that I'd fallen into very deep states of concentration. I've never gotten like that ever again, you know. It's funny, beginner's luck in a way. So the beginning wasn't a good, pretty one. It never really is, though, isn't it? It's always like, you know, we're blooming in the mud, like, you know, the lotus, you know, no mud, no flower, no rain, no rainbow. And there's something about, but there's something important about this period where I call the call. And we each have to answer it in our own way. You know, it's probably what made you start practicing meditation, or maybe something that brought you here. It's like, something is trying to get my attention and I need to be still in order to hear it, in order to be present. There's something very magical that happens in the present moment. You know, that place where one story ends before another story takes place. There's like this gap of a second called now. You might have felt it during the meditation, right? It's like, oh wait, I'm here, I'm meditating. Oh yeah, meditation. I love meditation practice. Maybe I'll go to a retreat. You know, it's that, and then we're gone again, and then we're back again, and then we're gone again, and then we're back again. But every time that you come back, the more that you are resting, it's like in those moments you're turning the TV off, right? And then there's this direct transmission. Transmission to what? That's the mystery, right? What is that? You could call it Christ consciousness, self-realization, Buddha nature, primordial awareness, you know, some people call it the field, neuroscientists call it all kinds of different names, like quantum level of consciousness, whatever that is. I feel like that is what is calling us home, right, to ourselves. And, you know, the call keeps happening. I've had to answer it many times and go deeper and deeper. It's like, when I'm here and I'm, and then it's like another call. Oh my God, you know, can I step in even another layer, another level? But sometimes these calls happen at different times in our life. You know, they can come with a breakdown. I always tell people every time in Oakland when I'm teaching, I always ask people, how many of you are going through a transition? So how many of you are going through a transition period? Raise your hand. Right. So just look around. But I ask that every night. How many? So basically, we're always in these epic transitions. And if you're living a spiritual-based life, that's even amplified more, right? Because you're signing on to something. You're signing on to wake up, not to be comfortable. And if you want to meditate just to be comfortable, those people don't stay on the path long, right? Because at some moment, you got to face your demons. And then they're like, well, I don't want this. I want the light, right? And they're like, I don't want to go to the underworld. No, no. But in the underworld, that's where all the roots are. That's where all the stuff is. And so meditation practice, it can be really hard at times. And I think that Spirit Rock they sort of sell a dream, at least on the imagery. You know, everyone's like, you know, everyone looks like, oh, I want that. Yeah, sign me up for that one. But if you really go on a retreat, everyone's walking around in old sweatpants and Kleenex, and they're like, oh my God, you know, I'm so sad, or this is happening. And you know, that's what the teachers see hour after hour, you know. And then everyone walks out like, okay, I'll go back to doing this. And so it's not a glamorous, it's not really that glamorous. It's actually, self-realization is hard work, and it's humbling. And it's about looking at what's true. And to find the truth, you have to see what's not. And, ah, that hurts. We see what we cling on to. So this call to awaken also happened to the Buddha in a very profound way. You know, in the Buddha's own life, you know, the story is that he, you know, he grew up as this prince, right? His mother was a queen and who passed away when he was a baby, but his father was this huge king with all this wealth. And his father wanted him to follow in the family business. Right? How many of our parents want that, right? It's like, I'm a doctor, you're a doctor, you're this, you follow. And so he grew up in this isolated palace, many palaces. His father gave him one for the summer, one for the winter, one for the rainy season. And he grew up in all this wealth and luxury. And when he was 16, they say he got married, as was typical. And he married a beautiful princess. And but what happened when he was 29 was really interesting. He became unhappy. It was like the call was starting. Something, it was like, no, this can't be it. And he had everything. So in some way, that's an important teaching there in itself, right? He's heir to everything. He's a prince. There was even this one sutta that talked about for a long time, he was carried around on this bed with a canopy so no, like, dew could fall on him or anything. That's the kind of extravagance. You know, that ancient India was like, right? This was the prince, like the royal family. I'm sure the royal kids are treated similarly in their world, you know? But when he's 29, he decided he wanted to leave the palace. And his father was really terrified because when he was born, the story goes that when he was born, a week after, they had a birth naming ceremony where he introduced everyone. You know how royal families are like, here's baby so-and-so, and everyone takes pictures, and they're like, yay, and it's official, right? That happened to him. And when he was at that naming ceremony, they say this sage came out of the forest, Asita. And Asita is a old sage and wandered, lived in caves and was known for this wisdom and hadn't been seen in years, but he appeared at this naming ceremony and walked right up to the father who was holding his son, you know. And then his father was like, Asita, what are you doing here? And he was crying. He was crying on top of that. So his father became like, what is this about? And he said, I'm crying because I won't get teachings from him. I'm too old. And he said, your son will be a great spiritual teacher. His father's like, no, he'll be a king, right? Not some wanderer like, you know, probably like you. No, thank you, right? You know how people are. His father was worldly. He was palace life. He was, you know, that was what they valued. So the Buddha gets this call. He gets unhappy when he's 29, and he says, I want to leave. What is outside of here? And his father's like, oh, no. No, no, no. You want to go outside? You know, why? Why would you want to leave? It's paradise. And he's like, take me out. I want to go out. And he started to become more restless, more unhappy. I want to go out of these walls. So his father sets up for him to go out. But little did he know that also they say the gods and the spirits also decided this was their opportunity to bring these signs forth, to wake him up, right? He was still asleep, to, you know, just not recognizing himself yet, right? He was still a prince in the palace, still living that life. So they arrange these signs for him. So he goes out, and the first sign that he sees as he's in his caravan going out, and his father tried to clean everything up to make it look perfect, but you can't clean up India. It's impossible. So sure enough, you know, even though he said, all the old people, all the sick people, everyone that anything looks dirty, get rid of it fast. I don't want my son to be disturbed by reality. Right? Isn't that how it is here? Get all these things up. No, we don't want to see that. Put the old people in those places. We don't want to look at them all the time. Like, let's get the other people and, you know, put them here. And, you know, and it's not that different, actually, you know. So he saw, sure enough, between the cracks, they say that the first sign he saw was a very sick person. And that
really bothered him. He went and the person was covered in sores and was ill and sick, and he never had seen a sick person. His father removed anyone with any illness from the palace. It was only beauty around him. Beauty, beauty, only perfection, only the illusion that this is what everybody's life is like, knowing that that's so untrue. So once he saw that, he was really like, wow, this is, people get sick here. So, huh, it already cracked the veil. So this isn't perfect place. Right? So then he goes out again, farther out. He wants to keep going, and he sees an old person for the first time, bent over, hair white, moving very slowly, and he recognized that that too could, that will be him. Everything gets old. Everything. Everything has a shelf life, right? It moves through stages. That shocked him. Never seen that before. Then he sees the big wake up, which was a dead person. He sees a funeral procession and a corpse, and they're walking to the charnel grounds. In India, they don't bury people in the ground. They're burned, right? And the charnel grounds, that becomes the sacred place. And so he sees this body being carried, and he follows it, and then he sees death for the first time. So again, that's kind of like the wake-up call, right? It's not perfect. People even die. And then, of course, the final sign is he sees a monk, and he leaves the palace that night, right? He decides that this was the call. So it worked. It got his attention. He left. That night, they say, or the next night, he leaves his palace. Prince Siddhartha is dead. He dies. He goes, and then he becomes the seeker for 6 years. So he answered the call. And I think what I want to just see about for you all tonight is, what is calling you in your life that you're not answering, that keeps on ringing? You know, because we all have these places where we're like, oh my God, I can't. I don't want to listen to that one. No, no, no. You know, it might be a call to adventure somewhere. Because during these periods where there's a strong calling, we had the desire to A, go on a pilgrimage, B, live differently, C, we might cut all our hair off, we might join a commune, start dancing, change our diet, you know. Like we go through some kind of metamorphosis, right? And people don't recognize you during that time. They're like, the you they thought they knew, it doesn't really apply, right? You could adopt a different kind of philosophy. You just start exploring, or suddenly you disconnect from everybody that you used to know. Like there's something that's kind of building up a force there. And it's during that time that we might have very interesting encounters with people, right? We might attract like sacred objects to us. Animals appear in different forms, or, you know, or we start having a lot of synchronicity during those times. Like you're thinking about Egypt and someone walks up with a book. Here's a book on Egypt. It's like, oh, I was just thinking about that. You know, have you had those moments where you're like, oh my gosh, or the right, all of a sudden a new community appears and they're all talking about this one thing that you were just thinking about. And then in a way we can look at those. And when I think about my own life, there was all this force behind to get me even to meet my teacher in that moment, Jack. Jack and I met at that retreat. I was on his interview list as an accident. And then I appear, but there are no accidents. Right? And then that becomes a very important relationship for me for the last 20 years, right? That becomes a pivotal moment of meeting that changed the course of things. So, and we all have those moments. And so the call to awaken can be intense. It's an invitation to basically a deeper way of living, ultimately. It's like an invitation to meeting yourself on a deeper level. Who are you really? Not what people tell you, not your gender, not your ethnicity, not how you were raised, not your drama, not your trauma. But who are you in the bigger story of our lives? You know, the bigger chapters. And so I like to explore this topic, I want to explore this topic with you all and see what we get to from that. Because there's always something happening. The change that happens during these periods, often the bottom falls out. And so I meet people like that all the time. I see clients in sessions and they're like, it's all falling apart. And then I just hold their hands and I say, like, let it. Something's unraveling and you've got to trust that it needs to unravel. And that's the hardest thing of all during these periods is to have faith, right? It's like, no, this is bad. In our culture, we don't know how to deal with these kind of shamanic periods. So people go on medication or they start doing different things because, you know, we don't know how to treat these spiritual kind of breakdown moments or what are breakthroughs, right? So we medicate them, we pathologize them often, right? Stop, because the medication and the stopping, what happens with that is people are like, don't listen, take this so that you can go back to work, right? It's like, stay the same. No, don't act like that. Don't go like that, right? It's like, kind of stay where you are. What do I need to do? I need to function. Right. You need to go to work here. Ignore all those emotions or what's happening so that you could stay the course. And the more we ignore it, the louder it gets and the more things start unraveling. It can take a long time, but it can be a long time of a lot of suffering. So, the fierce heart or a fierce heart finding strength, courage, and wisdom is the courage to answer the call. Like, do we have the courage to, like, pick up the real path that we're supposed to live, right? It takes real courage. I've gone off all over the world in courageous moments. And I want to encourage us to do that because at the end of the day, sometimes that's what it takes to have a breakthrough, right? Sometimes you have to put yourself on the other side of the world. You have to put yourself in an uncomfortable situation sometimes. Or life is calling you into that. It's like the test. You know, you have to kind of take a leap of faith at times. However, it seems to me that it always works out, right? So I want to stop there. I've been talking for a bit. I'd like to stop there. And I'd like for you to get into small groups. Let's do groups of three. How about that? Or groups of four? Let's do groups of three because it'll be easier for each person to really get an opportunity to share. And I want you to talk about the great call in your life, or maybe you had one recently or you're going through, like, what is calling you on? And I'm talking about your heart. I'm not talking about the mind part. I'm like, what, like, if you weren't afraid, what would it look like? Right? Because fear, I mean, that's it, isn't it? That's what we all have to come to terms with. Right, is our fear of being who we are, living our authentic life, and listening to that deeper part that wants to be free, right? That wants to be free. So let's do that. So we're gonna get into groups of three, and each person share. Maybe I'm gonna let you kind of choose the time. I'll ring the bell like 4 minute segment, so you can kind of just shift a little bit to the next person. Does that seem about right? 4 minutes a person? Yeah, that sounds good. And try to share from your heart. I mean, this is what I like to, where I like to teach from, right? You know? So, okay. Everybody, don't be too shy. You could just find three people around, you know? Link up if you're in chairs, everyone's in a chair, or just, yeah, we'll just make groups. If there's, you know, it looks like you guys need one more person. Yeah, and if you only have a group of two, that's okay. Yeah, I think someone went to the bathroom, so. So. Hope that was interesting for you and insightful. I'd love to hear you share how that was. I just want to read you one thing. Out of the first chapter of A Dream is Born, I heard a Lakota prophecy attributed to Crazy Horse, which says, I see a time of seven generations when all colors of mankind will gather under the sacred tree of life, and the whole world will become one sacred circle again. We are the seventh generation. It's now. So, would anyone like to share? How was that? To just talk about the call. It could be hard. It could hurt too, a little bit. A little sadness in it, right? Because if we're not fully, if we're scared or not answering, and we keep hanging up.
Put it on mute.
Put it on mute. Not right now. Right. And that's okay. That has a wisdom too, you know. Does anyone like to share about what that was like? Or what they noticed or anything? Mm-hmm.
Yes, I like our my sense of what we were all talking about is there is some way that you all have different ways. This is like my interpretation. Like that's like a really it for me personally it also felt like a difficult question to answer. Of like what is the call, you know, it seemed like trying to like for me I guess like trying to form smoke or something. Like I don't know where that's at. But yeah, that was my experience.
Yeah, and it may be that you're answering it in your own way right now, right? You're reflecting, you're meditating, you know, this could be a deeper, it's not like a sometimes immediate. Yeah, it doesn't always show up as like, I'm going to the woods for 6 years. I'm like the, you know, that moment is like, my life this way. For some of us, it's that, but sometimes it's a little bit different, yeah. But thank you. Yeah, thank you. Anyone else wanna?
We should probably use the mic just so we can capture it in the recording.
In that case, I won't share.
Do you want to give instructions?
No. Do it like that.
That looks good.
So,
don't drop it.
Thank you for the teachings. Thank you for the teachings. For me, the call right now really is about, it's about attitude and less about the nuts and bolts of what to do and more about how to do it. Like I think the spirit is saying you can go this way or you can go that way. But the question I'm interested in, Femi, is who will you be in the choosing, you know? So I'm at an inflection point professionally with school. Just a year and a half more and I'm done. I go that way. Or stop all the struggle and go teach yoga somewhere on an island. Like just either or. And either way, I thought that much of the question was about what to do. But again, where I'm being called to grow is the word that keeps coming up is fidelity, like fidelity to the vision, fidelity to the dream, whatever the vision or dream is, like, can I give to it with love, with kindness, with gentleness and let go of an old way of functioning. So an old way of functioning is just push. I take a lot of pride from the fact that I can just work hard and push through anything. There's benefit to that. But right now it's far more important that I learn how to move through life without so much pushing and know when is an important time to employ that hard work ethic. But more important than that is not striving so much for each. And your life does not have to be a constant struggle. There are challenges for sure, but whether I go this way or that way, can I do it with a kind, gentle heart to myself? Not condemning myself, not damning myself, not pushing myself so that I don't. So that I squeeze down and life becomes dry and brittle. So again, less about what to do and more about how to do it and who I get to evolve into in the process.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you. Others? Anyone else want to comment? You can also make a comment about anything, too. Yeah.
So I was saying to my group is that when the unicorn calls, you must answer. And that's the struggle that I have right now. How can I enter into a spatial space for myself where I can hold kindness and also be let the truest expression of myself come through and really honor that? And even me speaking about it right now, there's this sense of sadness because I feel that I've neglected myself in that way. And maybe because of where I am now, where whatever struggles I'm going through at the moment, is this transition of how do I be myself in the world? And since the majority of my day is spent working, so that's where I'm coming from, is how do I be myself in that environment? So what I am learning, especially within the past 2 years of I was quite away from myself. And within the past 2 years, I've slowly moved closer and closer. And I'm still very attached to this idea that there's a narrative there. But I'm like, hey, that's not true. I everything that, like, actually, last weekend, I went to Texas for the first time. They're very nice people down there. You know, so these experiences are checking me.
Yeah.
Saying, yeah, this is where you need to be. This is the awakening moment of the teaching. So, and as I was saying, is that as the unicorns are calling, I think I'm also moving towards where the unicorns want me to be.
Mm.
So.
Yeah, very sweet. Yeah, thank you.
Hello.
Hello.
I think for me, sometimes the calling is, there's clear, there's moments of clarity of what that calling is. And sometimes there is not so much clarity, but there are constant decisions that I would make through life that I can tell that there's a deeper calling that's rooted in what decision I should make and whether I should follow it or not follow. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's viewing what peers are doing or what direction came from my parents from the past that's deeply rooted in who I am. And I think through the moments that I encounter is when I get a deeper understanding of or reminder of what that calling is. And but often the calling isn't as present. And so it's working on being as still as I can and not focus on the grasping that's there on past memories or aspirations of where I should be. And remembering to be as authentic as I can be in every moment, so I can be there for others, there for myself, be compassionate as possible. And there I get a resonance of what my calling actually is. Mm. But it's being still, or trying to be still, to remember what that is.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you. Yeah, everything kind of comes out of the stillness. It's a powerful place, that still mind. It's like what were we saying? Power, stillness equals power.
Power equals energy over time.
Power equals energy over time. Yeah, thank you. Others? Anyone else want to share before we close?
I guess thank you for everyone who's here and for your time and wisdom. For me, the biggest call in, at least as I was sharing with the group, that question of what's the calling is, as I expressed, was this, I felt a lot of joy, but then a mix of sadness as well, in the sense of what is this self or this next thing that you know you want to be, or that you really, that continues to tug and pull. And then for so long feeling like, yeah, I was neglecting or denying myself of those things. But this, and really a big part of it is unlearning and not being afraid to unlearn.
Yeah.
And even just and listening to it, like I'm getting emotional thinking about it now. Mm-hmm. It's just like the unlearning, mm-hmm. not only from what was told to me, but even things that I thought a man or a black man was supposed to be like, or what are the things that were constantly pulling me away from being connected to the source. I felt so disconnected mm-hmm. for a long time, connected myself to all of these changing or ever changing things, whether it was being active with a bunch of women or going out all the time and constantly waking up with hangovers or whatever the case was, and feeling like I'm constantly disconnected from the source. Mm-hmm. And when I actually had a chance to myself even sit for 10 days in silence at a retreat, it was as if I actually am looking at the trees with a smile on my face. It was like all of the stuff that I constantly ignored or neglected, even myself, or the sensations in the top of my head. I'm like, whoa, like I'm here. I feel here. I feel this thing of knowing, right? Like being really in tune. And that was, I think the calling was to unlearn all of the things that I was told, just because I look a certain way, I'm supposed to fit into this box. Mm-hmm. But then I'm like, actually, I'm connected to all of this, or in wanting to get reconnected back to the source or the creator of all of these different things. So being able to see the sun rise and the moon and, you know, hear birds singing and hear people breathe. I mean, all of the different things that we constantly take for granted, as well as ourselves on a huge level, and seeing things come and go. I smile at that, but I also do have a bit of sadness, because I'm like, all my 20s, we're just, you know, we're like in the club or,
right,
you know,
right.
And someone's, I'm not going to get too personal, but yeah, just whatever. But now it's like I'm here and I'm with beautiful people, and these people have always been here. So seeing the signs even having you here and ask that question, as soon as you ask that question, I felt like this rush almost getting ready to just like come out like of tears, because it just was an amazing question. Mm-hmm. So answering that calling of wanting to unlearn, but also to reconnect to what's going on. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that's a good note to kind of wind down on. And I
spring is yes, possible for
yes,
one more.
Yes. Yes.
The only thing that comes up for me, being cognizant of power dynamics.
Yeah.
Is that we had several brothers share. It was beautiful. I appreciated what the men had to say. Oh. But if there's any sisters in here, any women that would like to share, you know?
Yeah.
I'm very cognizant, especially in black-white dynamics. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I invite any women that would like to share. Lanice, you say you want to share? Roberta, want to share?
Thank you, Femi. Yeah.
Sure. Thank you. I kind of noticed that too. So I'm glad you spoke up and said something about that. So I had a very, I think when I was listening to you and thinking about that call, I guess it occurred to me that the times in my life were their greatest kinds of transitions to answer that call. You know, they've been hard. There's always been the big struggle with it. You know, and I some time ago, I just really felt like I set my heart on pilgrimage. And so wherever that would lead, I would go. And I have this picture that really came to my mind. We were talking about some of the bigger things that have gone on and that are going on right now, is that, you know, even though things are like hard or that are involved in transition and change, I just really know that for me, my experience has been something that has been birthed in me as a result of that is powerful. And it always makes me think of like when, you know, when a baby is born, mm-hmm. it's going from a really comfortable place where every need is met and it's safe and protected. And it goes through one of the, probably the most painful little journeys possible and comes out crying if it's mm-hmm. healthy and going to survive. It's a traumatic experience, you know, and yet it's a natural process. I mean, you know, the baby can't say, oh no, I'm going back. This is too hard. I don't want to do this. Yeah. You know, everything is working if it's working right. And if it's not, we have alternative methods to help it along, but you know, it's just a natural process and you just move through it. And so for me, I think, it helps me to realize that the very first change in life I ever went through involved painful transition. If I trust the process and let it keep moving me forward, something of beauty will come out on the other side. Mm-hmm. And it'll be a new birthing in me of some sort, and hopefully give to others around me then as a result of it.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, the birth pains are real, right? Growing pains, birth pains, contractions, when we're in that place of the fire alchemy. It's real and it's cyclical. You know, this change and these calls, and I track a lot, 7 year periods. People talk a lot about seven years. 28, as we know, goes into, for people, a Saturn return. I mean, we call it that. Then 42, often people hit a midlife thing or a, you know, and we call these midlife crisis, the break, but it's just how it is all the time. There's always, you could just label it. Oh, it's my transit and astrology. It's, you know, but it's like we're always kind of breaking down. Something's breaking down for something else to be reborn constantly, actually. And it's hard on our ego, right? That's the hardest thing, because we get it, everything all built up, and we're like, this is it. This is the moment, right? Hang on. And it just starts unravel. The moment it gets to that, it just unravels again. It's like building a sandcastle in the area where the waves are going to come. You're like, wait, the waves. Oh no. You know, and then it's gone. And then you build up another one, and then the wave comes. And so I think that, you know, the last thing I'll say is we just have to embrace that instead of resist it. I love Pema Chodron, the nun, the Tibetan nun teacher, Pema Chodron. She writes about this where she calls it the leak in the boat. She's like, there's a leak in the boat and it's never going to stop. So you have to live with it, right? And it's like this madness. We're like, oh, you know, our whole life we run around trying to get rid of it. And she's like, the key is everyone else is just sailing along. It works, the leaky boat. You know, it'll get you there. But, you know, it's like embracing this. It's really about embracing the difficult as a teaching. And we just don't really like that idea very much. We want to be free, but we don't want to go through the birth pain, you know. We just want to be born. Like, you know, I just want to be that baby all cleaned up, all loved up, but we don't want to go through that epic, you know, middle passage part difficulty. So I just, you know, want to encourage everybody, you know, when we talk about these topics about the call, it can bring up suffering, because even when I get closer to myself, I'll start weeping. Even you can have a spiritual insight about what you didn't see before, and it brings tears. It's a mixture of tears and like homesick and remembering something. It's like an ancient memory comes, and it just makes tears. So you can just embrace them as part of the exploration. And and we're all growing together, so in that way. So, but I so appreciate being here with you all tonight. And I'll be here for the next, you know, 3 nights. Tomorrow I'll teach the Friday Sangha. Saturday I have a day long for women, Wisdom Rising. And then Sunday I'll be here for the Sangha. So you can come and hang out. Again, if you feel like it, I would love it. And, you know, a different mixed crowd. But it would be so good. You could make like a little retreat this weekend and reconnect and just keep listening to your heart. I'm convinced that, last thing I'll say, is that there's an organization I love in San Jose called Heart Map. And it's made up of like cardiologists, neuroscientists, healers. And they put out they do these incredible tests on the heart in the heart they discovered has a brain. Yeah. So there's like, it can know things way before. Before a tragedy, they're doing this whole thing where they're linking hearts up, kind of like how trees in the forest talk to each other. Hearts all do that. They connect to each other. And it's amazing. I'm going to talk about it tomorrow night when I give a talk about all this new things about heart math. But it's really, really powerful. And what they do when you go there and they study a rhythm of your heart and they do all this stuff and they study heartbeats, rhythms, and basically they look at long-term effects, emotional and all these different things. But the point of that is to say that we can learn to listen from a much deeper place. And that's part of the calling. The separation is what hurts, right? It's like we're separate from that. And it drives us mad, you know. And when we touch into it, it can be just really, really deep, painful, and opening. So, and brilliant and illuminating. So, yeah. All right, everybody, it is 8:35, and we could probably hang out all night, but it's late in Minnesota time. This is like, you know, late night activity. late night. Only because it's cold and dark so early.
We do have a few announcements.
Yes.
So, we have announcements. First, Jazz Hands Appreciation Spring.
And to you all.
Sunday, 7 p.m., Nils Heyman, who is one of our teachers here at the center, but also lives in the Bay Area now, will be giving a Dharma talk. And do we know the title of that talk yet?
Gratitude in Difficult Times.
Gratitude in Difficult Times, yeah. 7:30 p.m. here on December 10th, Sunday, POC has a half-day retreat starting at 12:30. The sign up for that? There is no sign up for that.
Tomorrow I will make it.
Okay.
Good answer.
Thanks. We also have the year-end non-residential retreat. Sign up that's still open and available from December 26th through January
31st.
Exactly, through the 31st. And yeah, sign up still open and available for that. Donna. So, Common Ground is a center, runs off of Donna. Well, the practice is freely given, freely received. So spring comes, and out of gratitude for what we receive, the blessing of her speaking and offering herself, so also in the same way to keep the cycle of giving and receiving going, we offer what we can to help support her and teachers like her. What we give, Common Ground gets a portion of it to maintain operating costs and Big Gage, big buck salary. And then another portion of that goes to Spring and our visiting teachers. So always like with the Donna to simply tap into ourselves and let get a sense of what we've received from her being here, from the talk, from her helping to create this space in this community. And then from that sense of gratitude, let that guide and instruct how you move forward with your Donna. He was like, what number was it? Don't worry about it. Just let it tap into the gratitude. Find out what feels right for you and give from that place. You can give, there's a bowl set up out front. You can give on the iPad out to the left, to the right as well. And It's very well received and much appreciated. Any other announcements?
Just reminders we're getting out, especially because spring has built that month, that
EDFR
is still going on.
Yes. And spring will be selling and signing books out front.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, in here.
Maybe that would be easier. Yeah, we could do a table. Maybe not at the altar. You're right. Yeah. Sure. Yeah, we'll put a little table.
Signing books. I bought my copy a little bit ago. I also had to give my copy to Spring.
And I gave it to someone else. Yeah. And then
all right, so with that, thank you all so much.
Yes. And if for some reason you want a book tonight but you don't have cash or a check, you could always PayPal me later. But you got to remember to. But I trust that you'll remember. I can
is
give
there
you
instructions.
You just can. I can give you the email address, and then you can just go through my email. Yeah, it's on my website too. But I can just give you the email, and then.
Is there a website in the book?
I don't know. No, I don't think. Oh yeah, it is. Learn more at springwashington.com. Yes.
Okay.
But I can just write down the email and that's quicker.
Are you doing that on Saturday
too? I will do it all weekend.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're going to be here, yeah. Yeah, so we'll do that. It'll be fun. But thank you all. So good to meet with all of you. Keep practicing. Yay. Yeah, thanks so much for coming out. I hope to see you more this weekend.
This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.